World Ain't Ready, a Les Mis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 13. The next few minutes are not too clear in Grantaire's mind. He knows he must say something, because Barral offers to give the others a ride home. He knows he must not explain it very well, because Jolie says to tell Eponine they said hi, and, "We missed you, dude. You would have been so good at yelling stuff." He climbs into his van, skids out of the parking lot to the sound of nothing but his own turn signal. His thoughts are already too noisy, and he needs to concentrate, needs to pay attention at intersections and keep to the speed limit, and stay on the road. He doesn't need to remember the way to the gas station. All he has to do is head towards the smoke. The glowing numbers on the tape deck say 9:57. It doesn't seem like something should be allowed to go this wrong so early in the night. House fires, and cinders floating in the air, and the tremor in Eponine's voice on the other end of the line. These are otherworldly things, meant for the sick, surreal lurch of 2 a.m. His friend's life has been blown into fragments, before and after, with a sharp crack down the middle, and the Daily Show isn't even on yet. The world is still awake, and Eponine's house is burning down. He thinks of her sharp, rusty laugh through the cell phone speaker like a serrated knife, and he steps on the accelerator. He thinks he obeys traffic laws all the way there, but he'll never be sure. The Shell station by the McDonald's on 5th has never felt so sinister. The yellow is garish against the smoky sky, and there's something mocking in the neon signs for beer and lotto tickets, the ad on the door for Cool Ranch Doritos. Eponine is leaning by the entrance, smoking a cigarette and shivering despite a sweatshirt, her bare legs too pale against the black of her combat boots. A man in a suit gives her a dirty look on his way out, for the smoking or the boots, or maybe for the shortness of her skirt. She hunches her shoulders against it, and Grantaire wants to punch that guy in the mouth. The car horn feels like a bad idea. Grantaire pulls right up in front of her, rolls down the passenger window. "Hey." Eponine looks up and sags with relief. "Thank fuck," she says, grabbing at the door. When she scrambles into the van, he can see that her skirt is actually a nightgown, faded pink with little ducks. It looks old, but he knows he's never seen it before. She flicks the cigarette out the window, a familiar gesture made wrong, too fast, too jerky. He can't decide whether or not to touch her. Very lightly, he sets a hand on her elbow. She jumps. "Eponine, are you okay?" he says. "Where's Gavroche?" "He'll be here in a sec." Eponine tugs the sleeves of her sweatshirt down past her thumbs and rubs at her arms. "And don't worry, we're fine. We got out before they lit it." It's tossed off so casually that he can only stare at her. Grantaire still can't push the facts of it into his brain. It's one thing to sit in his room, surrounded by his posters and drawings and all of Eponine's shit, and think, "Mr. and Mrs. Thénardier would do anything." It's another thing to sit in the Shell parking lot with smoke curling behind them and think, "Arson. They set your house on fire for the insurance," he repeats, like saying it out loud will make him understand. "Gasoline." Eponine floats a hand up like climbing flames. "Woof. Went up a lot faster than I thought it would." Grantaire doesn't know what to say to that. Her voice is a monotone, numbness or front. Either way, she doesn't need the terror clawing at the back of his throat, the tremor in his hands, and the churning in his stomach. He breathes through his nose, trying to match her calm. "Where are your parents?" "Back at..." She jerks her thumb in the direction of home. "Still talking to the fireman, I think. I told him we were stepping out for cigarettes." Eponine picks at the cuff of her sweatshirt. "When Gavroche comes out, we should book it. Not sure how long before they think to check on us."
"Are you..."
he starts. Eponine is rubbing at her eyes, which look weird without makeup, unfinished. He's only ever seen her this way when she's about to go to bed. It makes her seem younger, somehow smaller. "Look," says Eponine in a low voice. She glances back at the door. "I told Gavroche if he was good, he could shoplift one thing, but he's going to be back soon, so real quick. We need to get out of here, go to your place, grab real clothes." "Yeah, of course. And you guys can crash there, obviously, it's..." Eponine is shaking her head. "And you and I have to go do something tonight. But first we need to find someone to watch Gavroche. Because if we tell him he's not allowed to follow us, he is definitely going to try."
"Yeah," says Grantaire. "Because Gavroche insisting on going wherever he's not allowed to go is the first part of this whole nightmare that makes perfect sense to him."
"He knows some of what's going on," says Eponine. "But you're going to have to play along and not ask a lot of questions, because he doesn't know all of it, and there's stuff I want to keep from him."
Her eyes are on the window again, and it pulls Grantaire's gaze to the glass, to her misty reflection that's about as solid as the girl sitting in his van. He doesn't know if he's ever seen her more tired.
"Just for now. If I can."
"Like what?"
"I don't know if he realizes yet that we can't come back," she says.
"To the house?" Grantaire doesn't know much about fires, but that pillar of dark smoke looks pretty final to him.
"To the family."
"Eponine," he says, dragging his voice back from the octaves it wants to climb. "What the hell is going on?"
"Why?" "One step at a time," she says,
glancing back at the gas station shop again.
"Your house first."
"And then what?" he asks. She doesn't turn to look at him.
"Eponine, what are you guys gonna..."
Someone's knocking on the side of the van, and Grantaire almost yells before he realizes it's just Gavroche.
"Yo,"
says Gavroche, hopping inside and yanking the door shut behind him.
"Drive,"
Eponine mouths, and Grantaire does what he's told. Presented with the vast array of offerings at the Shell station on 5th Street, Gavroche chose to steal a single package of batteries.
"I can't believe you,"
Eponine tells him, as she picks through the piles of her clothes.
"Like, is there a more boring thing you could have taken?"
But it's half-hearted, a poor line read.
"Yeah," says Gavroche, ripping the cardboard backing away from the plastic. "Why didn't I pick something cool, like pork rinds or chewing tobacco?"
He reaches into the pocket of his hoodie and pulls out his Game Boy, flips open the back hatch, and loads it with new batteries. Eponine plucks it out of his hands.
"Why are you fucking with that?"
she snaps.
"Gavroche, get up and get changed."
"How's he gonna..." Grantaire starts to say. Because Gavroche is the one person in the room who doesn't leave piles of clothes strewn conveniently all over the floor. But Gavroche just flops onto his belly, tugs up a loose corner of Grantaire's comforter from where it's dragging on the ground, shoves some old science fair shit out of the way, and resurfaces holding a pair of his own jeans. There's no time to boggle at that, but Grantaire can't quite keep a lid on his...
"The hell?"
"Magic," says Gavroche, straightening back up. "Also, getting the sense you've never looked under your own bed before. Like, maybe ever." Grantaire stares at his comforter, sagging like the world's saddest magician's cloak.
"Oh my god," he says. "What else is under there?"
"Come on,"
Eponine commands, and when he turns around, she stepped into jeans and shoved her combat boots back on, purse dangling from one hand.
"Gavroche, we're not leaving until you put on your goddamn shoes."
"I don't get why we're leaving at all,"
Gavroche grumbles when they're back on the road.
"Me and Grantaire running errands," says Eponine briskly. "And we're leaving you with Montparnasse for like an hour or so."
"Dude, no,"
says Grantaire, leaning forward and staring at the yellow dividing line so he doesn't have to meet the glare he can feel on the side of his face.
"His whole house smells, and he never lets me pick the channel,"
Gavroche puts in.
"Well, you're not leaving your little brother with a drug dealer, Eponine. I don't care what..."
"I trust him," she says. Steely. And he remembers that, But he also remembers how quickly she dropped away from that group once she and Grantaire started hanging out. It wasn't because of 15-year-old Grantaire's incredible charm and charisma.
Yeah, but do you trust all his friends?
He says slowly. And it must land because she doesn't yell at him, doesn't say anything at all for a long moment, just leans forward in her seat until her shoulder blades jut out from under her sweatshirt.
Then fucking who?
She grits out.
Jolene Bossuet?
There's still the thing, says Eponine. It's only 10:21, and almost impossible to believe less than an hour ago, Grantaire was standing with them in that gym. The memory feels like a different country, one he can't return to.
You know they'd do it if you called them, he argues.
They're still heading toward the school by default.
Hell, Musichetta would watch 20 kids in a hamster for you if you asked. You can use my phone, it's...
No, says Eponine, with something close to violence.
No. We're not pulling her into all this, okay? I have one friend who doesn't know what a car crash my life is right now. Can we please, please?
Jean, says Grantaire.
Courfeyrac. We don't even know if they're home.
Well, shit, he tries not to yell. It's a pretty nerdy group of people. Odds are we'll think of someone who's not out partying on a Thursday night.
Okay, says Eponine, pulling herself back up. That's smart, yeah. Do you have his number?
He actually thinks she might mean Combeferre, until he remembers who he's dealing with. Exposing this much of her life to someone she's got feelings for is basically Eponine's worst-case scenario. It wouldn't have her relaxing a fraction in her seat, wouldn't send her mouth twisting up slightly at one side in an echo of an amused smile. What would be funny to Eponine, even now? Grantaire's discomfort, maybe. Well, shit. He grips the wheel with one hand, fishes his phone out of his pocket with the other. Even 2 hours ago, the thought of making this call would have fucked with his head. Now, he can't even feel that worry, punching in the numbers. What's a paper cut to an amputee? It rings 4 times, and then a very familiar voice says,
Hello?
And Grantaire wants to hold the sound in his ears, curl around whatever's left in his life that's still normal.
Hey, says Grantaire instead.
Next to him, Eponine is tired and drawn. The smell of smoke clings to her hair, but that could be his imagination. It still feels like he's calling from a battlefield. He takes a deep breath, tries to spin some lightness back into his voice.
Do you happen to remember that favor you owed me?
Angelos doesn't seem fooled.
Grantaire,
he says, much too serious.
What do you need?
Are you home?
Yeah,
says Angelos.
Why?
Grantaire swings the wheel wide, makes the turn onto Miller.
You ever babysat before, dude?
No.
Cool, says Grantaire. Yeah, okay.
He laughs, high and nervous.
Well, I guess the good news is that you're about to bust up some gender norms. We'll be over in 10 minutes.
Eponine is waving at him, trying to get his attention. She puts a finger to her lips, pointedly.
And, don't tell anyone.
You want me to babysit in secret,
says Angelos.
Yeah.
Grantaire wonders what Angelos was doing before his phone rang, if he was working on homework or reading a novel, or researching colleges to visit next year. It's hard to blame Eponine for not wanting to involve Musichetta in all of this. If Grantaire had the option of keeping Angelos separate from the car crash of his own life, he would take it. As it is, he just winces.
That's a pretty good summary.
Angelos breathes out, a staticky rattle.
Don't ring the doorbell, my parents are still up,
he says.
Call me when you get here, I'll come down and let you in.
Okay.
Careful about setting off the floodlights, they're...
Despite the circumstances, Grantaire has to snort thinking about that night in Angelos' driveway, sitting there in the dark bathed by interrogation-grade bulbs, how the biggest concern had been trying to make it look from far away like they might have been kissing, his vision burning white, his lips by Angelos's ear. Grantaire clears his throat.
Trust me, he says. I have not forgotten about the floodlights.
There's what might be half a laugh from the other side of the speaker.
Yeah.
This is their first phone conversation. It's also their second-to-last phone conversation.
See you soon, says Grantaire.
The stupid thing is, talking to Angelos helps. Grantaire doesn't have to remind himself to breathe as much for the last leg of the drive. At least there's a plan now. Or, not a plan. Because Grantaire still has no idea what's happening, what he and Eponine are going to have to do. But at least there's a direction to head in, even if it's just left on Hemlock. Grantaire pulls over in front of the neighbor's house, in case Angelos's parents happen to look out of the window or something. Come on, monkey, Eponine's saying, twisting around in her seat. I'm almost to a save point. Gavroche protests, thumbs flying over the buttons. Gavroche? She almost never calls him by his name. He must notice, because he only says, Fine, and stuffs the Game Boy back into his pocket, to the sound of a level being forever lost. They trek across the neighbor's lawn, the grass shushing wetly under their feet. Why are we coming here again? Gavroche mutters. Because Angelos needs to hear your top 10 favorite post-punk albums, says Grantaire, and Gavroche hits him on the arm. Wait, says Gavroche. This is Angelos's house? You've seen it before, Grantaire points out. Eponine says nothing, keeps walking, eyes forward. Gavroche has to trot a little to keep up. Looks different in the dark, he says, and there's no arguing with that. Thanks, Grantaire. Everything does. He shivers. He really should have grabbed a sweatshirt, but it's too late now. There's light flickering in an upstairs window of Angelos's house. His parents, Grantaire assumes, watching some late-night TV in their room. With any luck, they've got the volume on high. Grantaire grabs his phone, hits redial, swallows hard like that can settle a stomach. This time, Angelos answers on the second ring.
Are you here?
He says.
Front porch,
says Grantaire.
One sec.
The line goes dead. Military efficiency, which, to be fair, is what they need right now. Grantaire shifts his weight around. He thinks he can hear feet thumping downstairs. When he turns back toward Eponine and Gavroche, she's in the middle of a half-whispered speech. Grantaire is torn between a hunger for any insight into what the fuck is going on, and a hunger to leave them some tiny scrap of privacy. He studies the welcome mat instead. There's a pair of muddy Crocs to one side. Gardening shoes, maybe. Grantaire's dad used to garden, he thinks. Now they pay somebody to do it. How long does it take someone to answer the door? Eponine is still whispering. Grantaire cranes his neck back, trying to get a decent view of the sky, light pollution still browning the edges, a sliver of moon doing its level best. They're facing the wrong way to see the smoke. The door opens, and there's no time for it, but Grantaire's brain takes a moment anyway to notice that Angelos is barefoot, that he's got on a black fleece jacket and plaid pajama pants, that he's wearing glasses, for some reason. Glasses and a very worried expression. Angelos doesn't say a word. He flicks a glance up, towards the sound of what's probably a TV, as if indicating the need for stealth. As if the need for stealth has to be indicated. Grantaire nods, and they trail after him, up the stairs and down a hallway. Grantaire's always hated this part in movies, when the characters are walking in places they shouldn't. It stresses him out too much, his heart in his throat, no matter how stupid the script is. How contrived the situation. You need to get out of there. He's only grateful when Angelos ushers them through a door and closes it safely behind them. He breathes a deep sigh of relief, and it's only then he realizes the incredibly obvious, They're in Anjaros' room. The walls are steely blue, and the furniture is very plain and new-looking. Books are heaped and piled and splayed face down on every conceivable surface, including other books. There's a crooked row of origami creatures on the desktop computer, Musichetta's handiwork, no doubt, and a bulletin board tacked full of photos, which Grantaire will never get to examine, never get to check for awkward candids or gloriously bad childhood haircuts, because they would not be here if there wasn't something desperately wrong. Anjara stands in the middle of the room, watching the three of them. "Is part of the favor that I can't ask what's going on?" he says, in a low voice. Eponine says nothing, her gaze distant and her hands pressed to her temples. It seems like a good idea not to disturb her. Grantaire looks from her to Anjaros and opens his mouth, but Gavroche beats him to the punch, perched on the desk chair like he was invited. "It's no big deal," says Gavroche. "Mom and Dad burned our house down because they needed the money, and Eponine doesn't want to lie to the cops about it, so we're lying low for a bit." He bounces on the chair, swivels back and forth. "Probably stay at Grantaire's, I'm guessing. They're going to be pissed when they find out." Eponine's posture goes rigid, like a puppet yanked hard on a string, but Gavroche has spun around to jog the mouse and frown at the screen. "What's your password, dude?" "It's on a sticky note under the keyboard," Anjaros says. "Grantaire, can I talk to you for a sec? In the hallway?" Eponine braces her hands against the top of the computer chair. "I'll make sure he doesn't delete anything important," she says. "Oh, come on," says Gavroche, craning his neck to look back at them. "You guys see each other all the damn time. Why do you have to go off together when..." Grantaire really wishes he had a better plan than what he actually does, which is to run one hand down Anjaros' bicep like he can't help himself, and say, "You'll understand when you're older." Luckily, it does work, in that Gavroche is distracted by making grossed-out faces, and it hopefully doesn't look too weird when Anjaros grabs Grantaire's arm and pulls him out of the room. Hopefully it looks... well... Grantaire needs to focus. He breathes in through his nose as the door shuts behind them. "Is he telling the truth?" says Anjaros quietly. "Their parents?" "Yeah." Grantaire squeezes at the back of his own neck, trying to force out the tension. "And congratulations. You now know about as much as I do, because Eponine won't tell me shit." The odds of Gavroche listening at the door with Eponine in the room to distract him are low, but Grantaire drops his voice anyway. "Except that she's pretty sure her parents are going to kick him out for not going along with it." "What?" Anjaros whispers. His eyes are very wide behind his glasses. "I mean, they've been kicked out for a day or two before, but permanent. And she doesn't want Gavroche to know, which can't really blame her." "Why am I looking after him?" Anjaros says. "What are you guys?" Grantaire shakes his head. "She didn't tell me. If he can't be around for it, man, I hope we're not confronting their parents. Her dad's basically a psychopath." Anjaros' forehead is creasing, so Grantaire adds, reassuring, "I don't really think that's what it is. Eponine's too smart for that. It's probably just something illegal." This does nothing to smooth the lines on his face. "Something less illegal than arson," Grantaire adds, "and not drugs." That much Grantaire had managed to work out while driving. If she was willing to go to Montparnasse for babysitting, he must be far away from whatever is going on. "What if it's dangerous?" Anjaros is more moving his lips than making sounds. It means Grantaire has to lean far into his space to hear. "Then that would explain a lot," says Grantaire, almost into his collarbone. "I want to go," says Anjaros, and Grantaire takes a step back to look up at him. "I can go. Eponine can watch her brother. She's the only one who knows what's going on," Grantaire points out. "Also, she's way, way tougher than me. I'm useless in a fight." Anjaros nods like maybe this was the resolution he wanted all along. "Okay, me and Eponine will go, and you can stay here with..." And it would sting, seeing Enjolras so capably write him out of the action, but Grantaire can't focus long enough to be offended.
"I'm the only one with the driver's license,"
he says instead.
"Yeah,"
says Enjolras.
"Sorry. Just, this is a terrible plan. You don't even know what you're doing."
"Yeah, but I never do anyway," says Grantaire.
Enjolras just crosses his arms and closes his eyes, head bowed, almost the way he did that day in the nurse's office when they talked about Friday. Enjolras is worried, he thinks out of nowhere, and he doesn't know what to do with that thought, the way it tugs at his ribcage and grips his throat.
"Please," says Enjolras, "please take this seriously."
What he wants to say is that he doesn't know another way, that he gets how high the stakes are, but it's like something from an old cartoon, those scenes where Daffy Duck strolled off the edge of a cliff without realizing it, how, if he didn't look down, kept whistling, kept his feet moving and his eyes ahead, he could manage a few normal steps before gravity kicked in. That's what Grantaire needs, the hover before the free fall, because if he thinks about the rocks below, he's not going to be any use to anyone.
Is that comforting? A metaphor about plummeting to his death? Shit, Grantaire is not good at this.
"I am,"
Grantaire says instead, and it makes Enjolras open his eyes again at least.
"I swear I am. It's just, if I stop making jokes, my head's, like, gonna explode, so..."
There's a quiet knock behind them, and Eponine's voice, flat and deadpan through the door.
"Hey, you guys done being gross or whatever?"
Enjolras jerks a hand at his own head.
"Mess up your hair," he mouths,
because they're back to this again, and Grantaire is never, ever gonna get the chance to explain to him the mechanics of making out.
"Sorry,"
Grantaire tells the door. Enjolras repeats the motion, and Grantaire stuffs his hat into his back pocket and rakes his fingers across his scalp a few times. There's no time to argue, and the only person they even need to fool is Gavroche, who, at 12, hopefully doesn't have a fine grasp of the mechanics either. Who also has a lot of other stuff on his mind, because his parents burned his house down. Shit, shit. The door opens. Eponine emerges, pulling it shut behind her. Her narrow shoulders are squared, and her mouth is a thin line. For some reason, the strap of her purse slung across her body makes him think of soldiers. She turns to Enjolras.
"I told him he had an hour to explain all of rock history to you, so just pretend you're interested and you'll be fine," she says, in an undertone. "Grantaire, we've got to get going."
"Yeah."
The hallway carpeting is soft and spongy under his feet. On the wall across from them is a painting so bad that it could only be something Enjolras made as a little kid. It's been painstakingly matted and framed. If Enjolras' parents step out, they are so screwed. But now that Grantaire has to leave, he doesn't want to.
"Eponine, are you okay?"
says Enjolras.
"They waited before we were out to start the fire. We're fine," she says. "Grantaire?"
But Enjolras sidesteps her, blocking her from the stairs.
"I meant the part where your parents threatened to disown you for not lying to the police."
At disown, her eyes narrow.
"Grantaire, did you fucking tell him?"
Eponine hisses.
"What? He flutters his eyelashes and you just..." "I need to know what's going on,"
Enjolras cuts in, over what has to be the audible sound of Grantaire's pulse.
"Look, Eponine, you guys came to me for help, and I'll do it, because I owe him a favor and because I trust you, but..."
"Dude." Grantaire tips his head back against the wall.
"She's not gonna tell you, and it seems like we don't have much time, so all the more reason to get it over with,"
Enjolras presses.
"If I'm gonna be an accessory to a crime, I need to know what crime that is, okay? We're gonna help you either way, but we can help you better if we understand what's happening,"
he says, because apparently there is no lost cause in the world he won't fling himself at. Except that Eponine is sighing shakily, and when she opens her eyes again, she nods.
"It's not... we're not gonna hurt anybody," she says. "I just need to pick up some stuff."
"From where?" says Enjolras.
The library?
Angelos gives her a look.
The library's closed,
he says, and Eponine rolls her eyes.
Breaking an entry? It's not stealing anything,
says Eponine, defensive.
I left some stuff there, a folder. I didn't have time to find a better hiding place.
Relief washes through Grantaire's whole body. No violence, no confrontations, no theft. All they have to do is sneak up to a locked building, figure out a way to infiltrate it when Grantaire can barely manage his own locker, and then sneak out again without...
Do you need it right now?
Says Angelos softly.
I don't want to wait, she says. It's important, okay? How important?
Yo, guys?
Gavroche calls from inside. One sec, dude, Grantaire fires back. Eponine leans in and whispers in a rush.
Look, Gav was... My parents never wanted him. They don't give a shit about him. I fucking raised that kid. But if I go against them, they will take him from me. That's how they think.
She glances up at the ceiling and clenches her jaw, missing the horrified expression on Angelos's face. It's hard for an outsider to comprehend just how bad her parents are. Grantaire knows that well enough. It comes in lurches, like crashing down a series of awful waterfalls. Grantaire wants to pat him on the shoulder, although God knows Eponine needs it more. The look in her eyes says she might bite his arm off if he tried.
I snuck out some stuff before the fire,
she says, rubbing at the bridge of her nose.
Some of it's just shit we'll need to get jobs or IDs or whatever, but I took what I could. Printouts of emails they sent, receipts for a fuck ton of gasoline. I think I can pretty much prove it was on purpose. So, they push me, I push back.
Angelos is clearly still trying to take this all in, but he says,
If you wait for the library to open again... Doors open at 9 to patrons, but the workers are in there way before,
says Eponine.
The first two papers in that folder are our birth certificates. If anybody finds it, the people they're gonna try to get a hold of...
Are your parents, he finishes.
Yeah,
she says.
What the hell are you guys doing out there?
They all jump, but it's just Gavroche, sullen, through the door.
We need to go now,
Eponine says, clipped.
While the cops are still busy with the fire.
Yeah, says Angelos. His face is very grave, and Grantaire takes a moment to feel truly and profoundly guilty for putting him in this situation. Grantaire digs his fingers into the back of his own neck again. Cheer up, he says, summoning up a wobbly smile. This is basically a heist. You love those. It doesn't pacify Angelos, which, in retrospect, is not a shocker.
If anything goes wrong?
If we get arrested, you're my one phone call, Grantaire tells him, which is only half a joke, because if Eponine is with him, who else does that really leave? Angelos gives him a long look that Grantaire can't decipher. It might be, how do we allay the kid's suspicions? Because he can hear muffled footsteps approaching from the other side of the door. Grantaire knows only one way guaranteed to make a 12-year-old look away. As the knob starts to turn, he stretches to his tiptoes and reaches up to lay one hand lightly on the back of Angelos's neck, so that when the door swings open, Grantaire can already be leaning in to kiss him on the mouth. It's as quick as Grantaire can make it, basically a peck, no more lingering than that time Angelos kissed him in Javert's office. Time still unspools a little, slows breathless around the way Angelos is holding Grantaire's arm at the elbow, warm and steadying, around that momentary press of their lips together, even the burn in his calves from standing like this. The way he feels vividly and acutely aware of every cell in his body.
Oh, God,
says Gavroche.
My eyes.
Eponine just says,
We have to go,
both hands gripping the strap of her purse. Angelos steps away, frowning, but his eyes stay on Grantaire, or actually, on Grantaire's t-shirt. White's not great for this, he says. And the shirt is actually a very, very faded gray, but it is true that Grantaire is hardly dressed for a break-in,
Whatever the hell that requires. A robber mask? A cat suit? Hang on, I can lend you something, or wait.
In one decisive motion, he unzips his jacket, pulls it off, and presses it into Grantaire's hand.
Thanks, Grantaire manages.
Be back soon, says Enjolras.
We'll try, says Grantaire.
Jesus, you two, keep it in your pants, says Gavroche. As Eponine tugs him away, Grantaire thinks that, no matter what else happens, at least he got to see Enjolras blushing at mockery from a 12-year-old. In the van, Eponine is quiet again, like she used up all her words with Enjolras. There's no immediate excuse to talk. Grantaire knows the way. Right on Hemlock. The smoke is visible again, a sooty streak past the side of the road. He thinks he can feel her gaze following it. He wants to say something, but everything sounds cheap and stupid in his head. He wants to make her smile, but he gets that it's probably out of the question.
Never thought I'd say this, he decides on at last. But Christ, man, thank God you always leave your shit all over my room.
Eponine swivels back to face him, but her whole body is leaning towards the window. Grantaire, she says, almost gently, do you still really think that was an accident? It's painfully obvious as soon as she says it. Grantaire rolls to a stop sign, and he's never felt dumber than he feels right now. He's lagging so far behind, trying to separate what he knows from what he thought he knew, and he can't quite reassemble the parts into a whole picture again. All those nights she showed up with her brother and another bag of laundry, of books, her backpack, her sewing machine, Gavroche's jeans.
Thought maybe you kinda knew, says Eponine quietly.
He shakes his head.
No idea. None.
Well, yeah, I put that together, she says, twisting back towards the glass. How long has her shit been colonizing his room? It's been a fact of his life for so long, it feels static, ever-present, like a painted-in backdrop. Since Christmas, or before that, actually. Since Enjolras moved to town. Or before that.
How long have you known? He says.
It's beyond surreal to talk about this out in the open, in view of all of the ordinary things in his van. The mystery of Eponine's family solved at last, and in the shittiest possible way. He thought it would be impossible to get answers from her, that it would be one of those things he'd go to his grave never knowing. But maybe it was always only a matter of asking the right questions. Asking questions at all.
Didn't know tonight was the night till this week.
Her hands are twisting together from inside of the sleeves of her sweatshirt.
But they'd been talking about it for like a year. Year and a half, maybe. There's a lot of debt. Credit cards and whatever.
Yeah. A semester of Con Econ has taught Grantaire how to define bankruptcy and calculate APRs, but not how to quantify human desperation. The Thénardier parents cutting off their own kids, like an animal chewing its leg off to get out of a trap. Except, Mr. and Mrs. Thénardier were probably less upset about it than that. Less like losing a limb, more like kicking off a pair of shoes they never cared for anyway. Eponine has always been the one watching out for her brother. That much is not a shock. He's holding the wheel like he wants to crush it in his fingers. Breathe, he thinks, for the 100th time in 2 hours. It's still a struggle to remember. They don't talk again until they reach the library.
How are we doing this?
He says, once Eponine's gestured at him to park in front of the adjacent woods and he's killed the ignition. Grantaire is pretty sure it looks just as suspect for a giant weird van to be loitering on the edge of a forest, but he's so far out of his depth that he's willing to trust her instincts over his own. Eponine seems startled.
I need you to wait here. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
You're breaking into the library by yourself? On top of everything else, it's too much. He wants to shake her by the shoulders. He settles for unbuckling his seatbelt and turning to glare at her.
The building's from the 50s, she says. There's a lock on the front door, the end. A window in the back never shuts all the way. You can get in with a screwdriver.
Do you have one? He asks. She doesn't even blink.
In my purse? How long have you been planning this?
I haven't, says Eponine. One shoulder hitches up in what would be a shrug if there was anything casual about the motion.
Figured it'd be good to know how to break in somewhere, in case me and Gavroche needed a place to sleep.
Their lives have been so different for so long. The realization just keeps hitting him and hitting him.
Eponine,
he says. She looks back at him, but her hand is on the door handle.
Are you sure you don't want some help? How are you going to get past the alarms and...
If they had more time, he thinks Eponine would be rolling her eyes. Instead, she shakes her head once, sharp, and says,
No alarms, no cameras, no motion detectors. This isn't Ocean's 11. It's like breaking into a garden shed, okay?
Have you broken into a garden shed before? He says. There's no answer. And to be honest, he wasn't expecting one.
5 minutes, she says instead. Count to 500 and I'll be back.
That's like 8.5 minutes, he throws back, automatic, but she's used the distraction to leave her open the door and jump to the ground.
Jolie taught you well,
she tells him.
Wait here.
And then the door slams and she's running across the grass and away from the narrow island of light cast by his headlamps. Grantaire sags back into his seat. He inhales, exhales. It comes out shuddery in both directions. If his hands weren't still on the wheel, he's aware they'd be shaking.
Has it been 500 seconds yet?
He mutters. Probably not. He's not even sure if it's been enough time to walk to the building. No alarms, no cameras. It doesn't seem like it should be so easy to sneak into a library. Then again, the reference computers are all about the same age as Gavroche, so who knows? Combeferre shelves books on weekends, and he's got stories about people trying to sneak a look at porn sites, thwarted by the loading times. If Eponine goes to the library enough to know about sticky back windows and security measures, she probably ran into Combeferre at some point, although God knows what her cover story would have been. Come to think of it, Combeferre could even be how she learned these things. Maybe her weirdness about the guy never had anything to do with hormones or butterflies. Not a crush, but simple reconnaissance. There's seemingly no limit to what Grantaire didn't know, doesn't know. He rubs his forehead. He swings his feet. He counts half-heartedly to 15 and loses focus. His thoughts are like a flock of hungry birds. They won't stop moving. Won't settle on any one thing. What second would he be on if he'd been counting from the beginning, like Eponine had told him to? He thinks about flipping on the radio, but it turns his stomach. The thought of playing music while she risks arrest trying to protect her and her brother from the schemes of their own parents. Grantaire's afraid of a lot of things, but he's never been claustrophobic. He's feeling it now, though. The confines of the van pressing close around him. Eponine had said to wait. That's his part of the plan, and at the moment, maybe the only way he has of helping. Another teenager skulking around the area would just look suspicious. Still, every single time a pair of headlights appears in the distance, he takes a long, rattling moment to ask himself what he should do if it's a cop car. He can't even call her. She didn't have her phone on her when she left her house, and he doesn't know where it is now. In his room or a few blocks away, incinerated in the rubble. When he tries to turn his head, the muscles will barely move. He grips the back of his neck as hard as he can, like he can force the tension out if he pushes hard enough. It only hurts in a different way. It's like when teachers yelled at him for being too nervous to focus. The problem can't also be the solution. The library is only a few blocks from Eponine's house, but he can't find the smoke again through the window. He's not sure if the fire's burned out yet,
if there's nothing but a pile of cinders in the yard, or if little chunks survived here and there, her dolphin poster flapping in the ashy breeze, its wet purple eye staring down at whatever remains of Eponine's bedroom. The day they got high under that poster, Eponine already knew this was going to happen. He wonders how long Gavroche has known. Long enough to hide a change of clothes under Grantaire's bed, but that could have been 3 days ago or 3 months ago. It's true that Grantaire never looks. Gavroche is smart enough that he might honestly know everything already, no matter how hard Eponine's tried to shield him. If he does, it doesn't seem to bother him much, blessed with a middle schooler's lack of foresight. Grantaire thinks of Gavroche bouncing unconcerned in Enjolras' desk chair, and hopes the two of them are getting along, that it's not excruciating for either of them. Gavroche is a lot to spring on an unsuspecting person, and there's no real reason to think Enjolras is going to be especially good with kids. You can never tell with that guy, though. Wearing the jacket helps, in some obscure way. That it's warm, or that it's comfortably too big, or that it smells like Enjolras, which is to say, like oranges, which is to say, like women's deodorant. What a weirdo, Grantaire thinks, burrowing deeper into the soft fleece. The worst thing is when cars slow down as they pass by him. Maybe he's just imagining it, the drivers squinting through their windshields at the mysterious van by the side of the road. If he kills the engine or turns off his lights, that's just going to make him harder for Eponine to find. All he can do is try to shape his mouth into a smile, do his best impression of a good kid experiencing engine trouble, and pray none of these people are in the neighborhood watch. He rubs his forehead again and picks up counting from 15. At 41, Eponine materializes out of the shadows. There's no folder in sight, but she's clutching her giant purse to her chest. The tension in his neck eases just a little.
Everything okay?
He asks as she climbs back into the van. Her arms are still tight around her purse.
Honestly, think I've lost any sense of what that word's supposed to mean, she says.
He stills halfway through buckling his seatbelt.
Hey, did something?
No, she says. We're fine. I have it. She closes her eyes and hunches forward, and all he can think is, then why don't you seem any calmer? Grantaire's very cowardice about asking these questions is part of the reason this is all such a mess now.
What's wrong? He says.
Eponine sighs.
That was the easy part, she tells the windshield.
Why? Says Grantaire. What are we breaking into now?
By the interior light of the van, he watches her forehead wrinkle in the distant cousin of an almost smile.
If we're stealing the Declaration of Independence next, can I just say...
She shakes her head. Her face is a mask again. We're done. We're gonna go back to Enjolras' house, pick up Gavroche, drive back to your place. Gavroche can take the bed tonight. I'm not sleeping, she adds.
He grabs the clutch, wrenches the van back into drive.
You're going the wrong way, says Eponine. There's too many cars to turn around in the middle of the road, he points out. Keep an eye out for the next turnoff. That's going to be the library parking lot, she says, without humor. He pulls into the parking lot, swings the car around. It's a clumsy move, but she's way beyond giving him any shit about it. What's the hard part? He says quietly. When he looks over, her arms are only tighter around her purse. He thinks it's gotten darker outside somehow, although it's not like the sun has set extra since 10. They sit there listening to the hum of the engine, the air roaring past the windows.
Everything that comes after, she says.
I mean, says Grantaire. You guys can stay with me as long as you need.
No,
she says.
Actually, we can't.
Her voice is starting to wobble away from a monotone.
Grantaire, your parents are pretty dumb, but they are going to notice two extra people living full-time in your house.
He feels ridiculous, like a little kid lobbying for a pet horse, but he can't stop, because, other than this, he has no idea at all where they could go. The lack of options is a terrifying, sucking vacuum.
They don't know what I do, he mutters.
So we just hide in your room anytime they're home until you go to college? Says Eponine.
He wants to say, well, that's my plan.
But she must somehow read that in his sullen silence, because she doesn't ease off it. If they run into me, fine, whatever. You've got a friend over. But if they see Gavroche for a second, it's gonna raise so many questions. Do we just... Oh, hey, Gavroche, you can't use the bathroom until Grantaire's parents are asleep. Better hold it for 5 hours. Better go pee out a window. I can't do that to him.
Where are you gonna go, then? He asks. And he thought this was a fight, but there's no edge to his voice. It just sounds plaintive and desperate and queasy.
Her boots knock against the bottom of the seat.
You're gonna be a dick about it, says Eponine,
which can only mean bad things. From there, it's not hard to figure out. Just a matter of finding the worst-case scenario.
Montparnasse? He says. You agreed it was bad to let him babysit, and instead you're gonna fucking move in with him?
He's got his own place.
Yeah, where he deals drugs, Grantaire half yells.
Drugs you've bought, she says. So maybe don't fucking get on some high horse about what he does for a living.
His hands are clenching at the steering wheel again.
He's gotten caught, Eponine. He'll get caught again. You know how fucked up the laws are. You could probably get arrested for being around while he was dealing.
I'm not marrying the guy. 2 months and I'll have a deposit on a crappy apartment someplace.
You work part-time at a fabric store, he says. How are you going to afford an apartment?
I think they'll give me more hours if I ask, says Eponine. Under 40, but Donna just quit and I could pick up her shifts, which would give me 30 hours. So that and another part-time job, like maybe 20 hours doing fast food or something.
Every time Grantaire thinks he's gotten a handle on what's going on, things get more incomprehensible. Reality is unraveling.
You can't work 50 hours a week and go to school.
Well, yeah, she says slowly. And that's when he finally starts to grasp why she hasn't been laughing tonight.
It's too much. His heart is pounding, and he can't drive like this. Can't even see.
He pulls over on the side of the road, gravel crunching way too loud under a van that is suddenly thick with silence.
Grantaire is furious. He doesn't even know at who.
He closes his eyes.
Your plan is to live with a drug dealer and drop out of high school.
Oh my god! Eponine yells.
What, Grantaire? What in the fucking world am I supposed to do? Because I've been staring down this shit for over a year and no better answers have fucking appeared. So please, please, use your genius brain to swoop in and find the magic solution.
She's shaking.
Eponine, he says.
Because either I'm a fucking idiot or there isn't one.
Eponine hugs her knees.
If you, like, told someone, I'm pretty sure there's, like, foster care.
Are you fucking serious? Says Eponine.
Just live with some random strangers? How do I know it's not going to be the same thing all over again? Hell, they could be worse.
I think the odds are pretty good they won't be, says Grantaire.
I don't want odds, she says savagely. I'm not taking chances, okay? This is my brother.
If you think he's going to be safer hanging out with a bunch of criminals, he shoots back.
Stop acting like you're better than them, says Eponine.
You're not.
You didn't call them for help, though, he says. You called me.
When he turns to look at her, Eponine's eyes are out on the road, out of reach of the headlights, where the black sky disappears into black ground. He doesn't know why he ever thought she looked young.
Just drive, okay? She says at last.
I'm sorry, he says when they're moving again.
It's fine, says Eponine, colorless. You haven't had time to get used to it, whatever.
He shakes his head, feeling sick.
No, I'm sorry for, like, you've been dealing with this incredible shit all year. I was rambling on and on about my teen drama, and you had, like, actual problems.
that I had no idea about. None of that's your fault. But if I'd known, he says, maybe I could've, I don't know, not spent the whole year whining about my stupid crush. Grantaire, I didn't want you to know. For some reason, she sounds surprised. Like, yeah, could I have done less with the Angelos Will Never Love Me variety hour? Obviously. But I was never going to tell you. It stings to hear it put that bluntly. If you didn't trust me... Eponine is shifting around in her seat, turning to face him, maybe. No, she says. It's more like I just wanted someplace I could think about other stuff, I don't know. Like, I put way more work into that prom dress than I needed to. It was good to not to think. The thing is, he kind of gets what she means. He's got that year of his life where he was almost never sober to prove it. He wishes he could tap into a little of that numbness right now, to be honest. Something to distract from the guilt still closing heavily over him. But I could have helped more, he says. I could have... You did fine, says Eponine, sounding more exhausted than anything. Also, I stole some stuff from your parents, so...
Like what?
Nothing huge. Medicine, one time when Gavroche was sick. Saw the Imodium in the cabinet, and I just... He can hear the shrug and the rustle of her shirt. Also, some of your mom's tampons. Those things are freaking expensive. So, like, sorry.
Dude, I don't care, he tells her. Not like she's gonna trace the missing tampons back to me, you know? Or the... Is Imodium one of those things you can take to get high?
It's for diarrhea.
Yeah, so we're probably clear, says Grantaire.
Not like I wanted to, she says. He shrugs.
Don't worry about it. You needed it more, you know?
No, Eponine says. I mean, all of it. Not like I want to live in that gross-ass house. Not like I want to work at a fucking fabric store for the rest of my life. It's like... She laughs, raw and unsteady. God, everything is so fucked up. Like, suddenly I'm a teen mom and I didn't even get laid first? What is that?
Immaculate conception, he says.
So, like, don't yell at me, okay? She says. I'm not doing this for fun. I need you to be cool about it. Lack of any other choices aside, Grantaire has no idea how he's supposed to ever be cool about anything that would make her sound the way she does right now. Like someone reached over and squeezed all the life out of her voice. Can you do that? Says Eponine.
I mean, I'll try,
he says weakly. He wonders if any of the cars around them on the road came from the Battle of the Bands, how the rest of the music sounded, what it would feel like to still be able to care. A thought hits him. How are you going to get to work? Montparnasse's house is at least 5 miles in the wrong direction. Ride my bike, she says, and Grantaire winces because there's a long stretch where she'll have to ride on the shoulder of the highway. Then he winces again, harder.
Do you, still have your bike? He ventures. Like, I don't remember seeing it in my yard, so if it was in your garage when...
Fuck! She screams. When he looks over, her hands are balled into fists, and she's shaking way worse than before. Fuck, 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 my fucking bike!
It's okay, he starts.
No, Grantaire, it's not, she snarls back. It's not fucking okay. That's another fucking paycheck, that's... What am I gonna...
You can borrow my bike, says Grantaire.
She doesn't seem to hear him. Oh my god, I can't believe I forgot, she's saying. I can't fucking believe... I was gonna bike to your house yesterday, but then Combeferre offered me a ride. I can't believe I... God, I'm so stupid.
Seriously, he says. Take my bike. You can keep it. When's the last time I...
Jesus Christ, Grantaire, I do not want your fucking bike!
Okay, he says.
They make the turn onto Hemlock in silence.
Sorry, she says flatly. It's all right.
She sighs. probably will need to borrow your bike.
That's fine.
Thinking I might be pretty bitchy for a while, she says. Just to warn you.
It's okay, says Grantaire. Your life's basically a supervillain origin story right now, so...
No superpowers, though, says Eponine. No sex, no superpowers. Like, what the fuck is the point?
If I figure it out, I'll let you know,
he says, as they pull up in front of Angelos's house. Finally, she says. I'm so ready for this night to be over. Grantaire puts the van into park and doesn't state the obvious, which is that tomorrow night is probably not going to be a picnic either. There are not a lot of good nights in her immediate future. Crossing the lawn, Eponine looks over at him and seems to notice the jacket for the first time. Could have taken that off once you realized you were staying in the car, she points out.
I was cold.
Right, says Eponine. How much do you hope he lets you keep it and you can set up, like, a creepy shrine in your room?
5%, he allows.
Please. 15 at least.
Compromise, he says, pulling out his phone. 10.
20, she says.
Were you smelling it?
Her tone's still not entirely right, but maybe pretending to be okay is her new okay for now. He punches redial.
Hey,
says Angelos.
Hey.
Did you guys...
It sounds like he's choosing his words carefully, which makes sense, since Gavroche has gotta be right there.
How's it going?
Got what we needed, says Grantaire. We're closing in on your front porch.
The door should still be unlocked,
Angelos tells him.
You guys can let yourselves in. Do you remember where my room was?
Across from the most hideous beloved painting of all time. Grantaire nods, then makes a face at himself.
Yeah. Be up soon.
Maybe it's better that Eponine handled the break-in, because it turns out, even sneaking into someone's house with permission makes a skin crawl. Every step feels weird and wrong, like a giant alarm will start ringing any second, or a pack of attack dogs is waiting behind a hatch somewhere, ready to pounce. He and Eponine climb the stairs. From the other end of the hallway, a sitcom laugh track goes off. Angelos's parents must not have gone to bed yet. Eponine gives him a look he's pretty sure is supposed to mean, don't freak out, and he wills himself to the door of Angelos's room, where he can just make out voices on the other side.
My god, dude, Gavroche is saying. No, no. Rage Against the Machine, Rise Against Me. They're three separate bands.
I'll add it to my notes, says Angelos amiably. Grantaire's hand is on the doorknob, but he's standing there like an idiot, until Eponine elbows him in the back, and he remembers what they're doing. There's no point in knocking. He just opens the door and they slip inside. Gavroche and Angelos are at the computer, where Gavroche has about 10 different windows open, and where Angelos is, in fact, taking notes on a yellow legal pad. Two cups of untouched chamomile tea sit between them. At the sound of feet, Gavroche spins around on the chair.
Hey, guys, Gavroche says. Dude, your boyfriend doesn't know anything, he adds, sounding almost impressed. Where'd you find this guy?
Detention, says Angelos. Grantaire, can I talk to you for a... Gavroche makes an annoyed noise that is basically a carbon copy of Eponine losing at Call of Duty.
Again? He says. Seriously? Show some respect, man. Our house just burned.
He's cut off by Eponine hugging him. Hard. He doesn't squirm out of it or act annoyed, even jokingly. And Grantaire thinks Gavroche has to know more than he's letting on. He's a smart kid. And no matter how hard Eponine must have tried, there's no way she could hide everything. Angelos is tugging him out of the room by the elbow again.
We'll be back in a sec,
he says, and the door clicks shut behind them. Grantaire darts a glance down the hall, towards the source of the laugh track.
How was the heist? Says Angelos,
looking so reasonable in his glasses and his pajama pants and his navy blue replacement hoodie that Grantaire suddenly, abruptly, can't even pretend to keep it together. He can feel his face crumpling, that cartoon moment where gravity remembers its job description and the drop starts. He knows he's supposed to make a joke, but it's too hard. Even making words seems like an impossible mountain to climb. His throat tightens, and his eyes burn. "Grantaire, are you okay?" Enjolras asks, and Grantaire thinks of Eponine in his van, curled around her purse, before he knew how bad it all was. "Think I've lost any sense of what that word's supposed to mean." He shakes his head, immediately regretting it, but he can't smile and say everything's fine. He literally doesn't have the capability. "What happened?" Enjolras crosses his arms, not angry, more like he's trying to compose himself. "Did you run into their parents, or..." Grantaire shakes his head again. He's blinking so much, his vision is like a strobe light, but it's possible Enjolras gives him a concerned look. "If you didn't hate hugs," says Enjolras slowly, and Grantaire must pull some kind of face even through the sheen of tears and the wobbly chin, because Enjolras adds, "It was your one condition when we started." All Grantaire can do is make a weird snorting noise and keep shaking his head. The truth is, he can't remember why he'd said that, other than it seemed like having no boundaries might kind of freak Enjolras out. He blinks and blinks, and fails to square his jaw because his chin is still going. He makes himself look back up at Enjolras. Enjolras, who is, very tentatively, opening his arms. Grantaire doesn't consciously decide to hug him, but then he's diving forward, and then he's squeezing Enjolras around the middle, probably too hard, probably getting snot and tears on the poor guy's shirt. Enjolras' hands come up to rest on his shoulder blades, warm through the borrowed jacket, layer after layer of kindnesses Grantaire will never have any way to pay back. He doesn't even have the energy to feel that bad about it. "Were there problems?" says Enjolras, and Grantaire is pressed so close, he can feel the point of Enjolras' chin on the top of his head, the flex of his jaw as he talks, sound resonating in his chest. At the very least, it's something to focus on beyond his own stinging tear ducts.
"No,"
he gets out.
"No, the heist went fine, like, she got the stuff. I didn't have to help. It was, like, actually it was, pretty boring."
Enjolras has the grace to pretend like his babbling makes sense.
"Well, that's fortunate," he says.
That's all he says, and Grantaire wishes he would keep talking because the resonating is really nice.
"But something happened, right?"
The resonating is less nice when it's urging Grantaire to share.
"It's not really your problem,"
he stammers, in that hiccupy, almost crying voice he hates more than anything.
"I already cashed in my favor. You don't have to..."
"Grantaire," says Enjolras, and it might sound stern except for how lightly he's touching Grantaire's back.
"My favor lasted 2.5 months, and in the process, you were harassed and beaten up. All I've done tonight was spend some time with a middle schooler and learn a little about music. Realistically, we're not even yet."
"It's..."
Grantaire instinctively looks down, which means pressing his forehead against where he can feel Enjolras' heartbeat. Something about it lets him breathe steadier. Maybe it's just having a rhythm to focus on, although he's not sure that, say, an electric keyboard would be the same help.
"Eponine's plan for what to do next is that she's gonna quit school, get a second job, and live with this guy she knows who is shady as fuck. Like, dude literally just got out of jail for dealing drugs."
Every time he thinks about it, he gets angry all over again. The words catch hard in his throat, and he swallows. His face would be burning even without the tears, he thinks, just at the tremulous rise and fall of every word coming out of his mouth. But the bonus of standing this close to Enjolras, other than the body heat and the softness of his shirt, and that citrusy smell, and the pulse still thrumming under Grantaire's forehead, is that he doesn't actually have to look into Enjolras' face, which makes it easier to go on.
And she's, like, trying to be a badass about it, but she's clearly freaking out so bad, and I do not fucking blame her. Like, her life is ruined. It's just so fucking unfair.
That's a lot to deal with, says Enjolras.
For her,
says Grantaire.
Like, fuck, why am I even getting so worked up? What right do I have to be bummed? It's so much worse for...
It isn't productive to think that way, Enjolras cuts in. And Grantaire wants to laugh, make a crack about Enjolras' weird robot logic, but he still can't find it. The laugh, or the words, or the punchline. And a second later, Enjolras adds, and I'm not sure that's her only option. Grantaire sighs.
What else is there? I brought up foster care and she flipped out.
Fouillis in foster care, says Enjolras. He likes the family he's with right now. His arms have settled more around Grantaire, and it's so nice, Grantaire is briefly annoyed. They could have had 2.5 months of this, if only he'd communicated better.
She said it was too much chance,
Grantaire tells him.
Which, I mean, they could put her in Gavroche with really shitty people.
Actually, Eponine might have more leverage than she thinks, Enjolras says. So calm and reasonable that Grantaire feels an absurd flutter of hope, at odds with the rest of the night and also most of his personality.
But first, I should probably... That's not actually why I wanted to talk to you. I need your help with something.
With what? Says Grantaire.
If you say, like, overthrowing the patriarchy, I admire your pluck, but dude, it's been a long day. Maybe tomorrow if that works.
This close, he can feel the stutter of amused breath against his hair before Enjolras says,
no, unfortunately. It's... Look, I need you to help me explain something to Eponine, because you know her better, and I have the sense she won't take this well unless we're really careful.
What? You'd think the universe would run out of ways to screw her over eventually, but Grantaire knows better. The universe is fucking creative with this stuff.
It's not bad, exactly.
Enjolras is picking his words with extreme caution again.
It's, in the long run, it's good news, but I don't think she'll see it that way at first, and I don't want her to panic.
Not that I don't love super cryptic shit, says Grantaire, but give me a clue here at least. A code word? A hint?
He thinks he can feel Enjolras bracing himself. I told my parents, says Enjolras, when I stepped out to get the tea.
You told them? Grantaire repeats dumbly. The muscles in Enjolras' arms have not untensed.
Everything I knew about her whole situation,
he says in one exhale.
What?
Says Grantaire, so loud that Enjolras pulls him down the hallway, away from his bedroom door. Pulls him by the waist, pretty much, since they're still hugging, but Grantaire is barely paying attention to that.
Are you crazy?
I trust them, Enjolras says.
Also, I wanted a lawyer's perspective on this. She's a real estate lawyer,
Grantaire hisses.
How can you just...
Grantaire, can you appreciate that she might still have a better grasp on the law than a couple of teenagers? Says Enjolras.
Arson and insurance fraud on this scale, they're very, very illegal. So is forcing your children to lie to the police. Eponine's the witness to a felony. If she's willing to testify against her parents, people make deals about this kind of stuff. She could get some say what happened to her in Gavroche, where they were placed.
Grantaire tries not to wig out. He tries not to do the easy thing, which would be to leap to the worst possibility and stay there. The steady thud of Enjolras' heartbeat is helpful, but it can't work miracles. It's a struggle to process. Maybe it's not over yet. That maybe everything won't be terrible. It involves mental muscles Grantaire hasn't flexed much.
You're on your own to explain this to her, he says at last. Like, if there's a trial, that means a chance she could lose, and she is not in a gambling mood right now.
Angelos shakes his head.
It might not be that much of a gamble. If her evidence is good. If there's any record of the horrific parenting they've...
Okay, also?
Oh, God. Grantaire has no idea why this didn't occur to him sooner.
Shit. Good luck making her talk to an adult about this. Eponine doesn't trust anyone over 25 unless they're, like, a dead author or a dead musician. Her favorite teacher is the one she calls a bitch slightly less often than the others.
Grantaire? Says Angelos. And, yeah, Grantaire's maybe edging on something beyond an inside voice, but the more he tries to picture Eponine sitting in a courtroom, the harder it is to hold on to that shadow of a promise.
If you think the jury is going to believe an angsty teenage girl over a mom and dad, he says, it'll be, like, hours of, oh, she's just doing this for the attention. Oh, look at the music she listens to. She's so fucking troubled and emo. Never mind she didn't even tell me for a fucking year. Just let it weigh on her and weigh on her.
Grantaire, Angelos says again, with something like urgency. Grantaire knows he's getting worked up again, knows he needs to calm down. He presses his face back into Angelos' shirt.
Sorry,
he mumbles into the cloth.
Just, Jesus fucking Christ, I fucking hate her parents so much.
Grantaire.
What, dude?
Says Angelos. From behind them, someone coughs. Grantaire whirls around, and even if he didn't suddenly realize that, in tugging them away from his bedroom, Angelos had moved them down the hallway. Even if Grantaire hadn't just now noticed the open door at his back, or the fact that the man and woman standing in it both bear a strong resemblance to Angelos, Grantaire would still be able to tell that he was looking at Angelos' parents. Because that is just how Grantaire's luck works. In retrospect, of course it would happen like this. Of course Grantaire would meet them for the first time in the middle of the night, uninvited in their house, his hair a tangled cloud around his head, wearing head-to-toe black and a giant baggy jacket like a delinquent, obviously distraught, still wet around the eyes and cussing into their only son's chest. Of course. The woman who is definitely Angelos' mom has the same jaw, the clench of it, if not the shape. The man who is definitely Angelos' dad is tall and thin, with such pale blonde hair that his beard and eyebrows are almost translucent. He raises those eyebrows now, looking alarmed.
Is this a bad time?
Says Angelos' dad, softly, politely. Grantaire stares at him. He has no concept of what in the world he is supposed to say, so he just blurts out the first thing in his mind. Maybe not so surprisingly, proves to be a bad call.
Oh, shit, says Grantaire.